This is one of my favorite sections. The question has come up so much in our society about the implementation of practices of Braja Bhakti as opposed to the Aishwarya Bhakti or the reverential devotional process, which is generally known as Vaidhi Bhakti. Raja Bhakti is synonymous with Rag Bhakti. There's Rag Maya Bhakti, and then there's Bhakti which pursues the Rag Maya or Ragatmika Bhakti of the perfected souls. That is called Raganuga Bhakti. So this book is meant to show how our preaching can become superlatively empowered by going deeper into our own heart and into our own, self-searching for the truth of our eternal relationship with Krishna. We all have an eternal relationship with Krishna. I think simply by reading the introduction to Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, which he himself considered to be the ABCDs of spiritual life, in the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada opens up the discussion about how you can have a relationship with Krishna in one of five rasas. So it's not like, you know, oh, well, you can't talk about that because, you know, that no one's qualified. When I first got the Bhagavad Gita, of course I wasn't qualified. And I'm probably still not qualified. And honestly speaking, I don't spend my days and nights questioning whether or not I'm qualified. You know, my anxiety is that, okay, maybe I'm not qualified, but somehow or other, you know, I need the mercy. Somehow or other, I need this information to come down to me in such a way that I can practically apply it in life and actually gain something toward the progressive development of my eternal relationship with Krishna. And that means developing from Shraddha to Prema. And Prema means going beyond Sneha, Pranaya, Man, you know, Anurag, Rag, Anurag, Bhava, Mahabhava, like that. Which means that we, in order for us to experience those higher levels of prema, we need to get a spiritual body. Because without the spiritual body, you can't experience those things. Neither you can experience them, nor can you give expression to them for the pleasure of Krishna. So it should be understood that the highest evincible prema, which is tantamount to compassion. Compassion means, feeling paradukaduki, feeling distress. Beginning, charity begins at home. Where is home? Home means Krishna, home base. Compassion begins with our feeling distress, you know, about Krishna's distress. That translates externally in the preaching field as Mahaprabhu's expression to Haridas Thakur, as it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It translates as Mahaprabhu's expressing his distress for the fallen condition of the jivas, the wayward jivas, bahirmukh, those who have turned their face outward, away from Krishna. So, Haridas Thakur expressed in such a way as to relieve Mahaprabhu's anxiety. And Prabhupada, in the purport, says something to the effect, if I remember correctly, that this is real service to the Lord, to relieve his distress. Now, that distress is not only manifested in relationship to the condition of the wayward jivas. Krishna has other kinds of distress. Premika distresses. Radharani has other kinds of distresses. You know, they're not... Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Radharani, is showing Radha's distress for the fallen conditioned souls, the other parts and parcels of the pleasure potency of Krishna. You know, so that's one aspect of Radha's, you know, loving game plan, you can say, is to incorporate others who have fallen away. But there are other forms of distresses, personal distresses of Srimati Radharani in her feelings of separation from Krishna, and also Radharani's anticipation, just like in Prema Samputa, in the book called The Love Locket, how it is that Radharani was anticipating the distress of her sakis. You know, when Krishna stole Radharani away, and the sakis were all wandering, and they were feeling intense anxiety of separation from Radha and Krishna. So Radharani's thinking about how the sakis, you know, are not relishing this ambrosia of blissful, loving exchange with the ocean reservoir of pleasure, ocean of ambrosia, Sri Krishna. So then she decided that, well, you know, maybe I should just kind of like pretend to be tired, you know, and stop, make Krishna, put some flowers in my hair or something, you know, in order to allow the sakis to catch up with them. But then Krishna, experiencing what is in Radharani's heart, you know, understands that she's anticipating, and she doesn't want, he doesn't want the whole game to be spoiled by the intense rivalry or admonishment that the other sakis will show toward Radharani. So the mood will be, they'll go home in a huff and all these things. So then Krishna disappeared in order to take all the blame himself, so that the other sakis will understand, you know, how exalted is Radharani's feelings of separation in comparison to their own. So they'll get behind her, and by supporting Radharani, then the rasa dance will, you know, transpire in a favorable way. And Radharani's desire to see Krishna embrace millions of gopis simultaneously will be fulfilled, which is the whole reason why she inaugurated the Maharas. So anyhow, there's need for discussion about these things among devotees who are serious about progressing to the ultimate goal of life. It may not be a discussion for everyone, because maybe everyone's not so serious about advancing to the ultimate goal of life. Maybe they, you know, are just too externally oriented, too superficial in their devotional pursuits, not deep enough about their, you know, purpose in life. But Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness, you know, is meant for purposefulness. So therefore, I always like to stress that we need to take a close look, not only at where we're at now, that's like an artanavritti, but we have to take a close look at where we are supposed to be going. When you walk a tightrope, you know, in the circus, they have a tightrope. So, from the very beginning of your entrance onto the tightrope, you have to know where you're going. You have to have your eyes on the goal. You can't be looking down because you're apprehensive about taking the next step. Where are you going to put your feet? Because you're thinking that, well, you know, what if the rope is not there for me? You know, you can't be looking this side toward mental speculation or looking toward sense gratification on the other side. Because in any case, if you look this side or that side, or if you look down, then undoubtedly you'll fall. But if you, from the very beginning, from the very first step in your progress in Krishna consciousness, and that's why we see in the very introduction to Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada is saying that one can have an eternal relationship with Krishna in one of the five rasas. Because Prabhupada's introducing the idea from the very first step, ABCDs. Discussion about this throughout the book, and showing how it's necessary to recognize the intersupportiveness, the synergy between the performance of Sankirtan Yajna and the cultivation of Antaranga Bhakti Bhajan. How there's need for both in order for the thing to actually fructify. Without Sankirtan, no other Anga of Bhakti will be fruitful, including Lila Smarana and other aspects of Rag Bhajan. Sankirtan is absolutely essential, and Sankirtan is deemed as external. It's as external as you want it to be, but it's also as internal as you want it to be, depending on your transcendental mindset or heart set, as it were. So, just a little introduction, and then, if you don't mind, I would like to read a little bit of this. There's a whole lot of prerequisite information, which probably would be useful to lead into the discussion, but there's not time for that, so I'll start at this point. At which stage in one's devotional progress does esoteric instruction concerning the culture of one's internal spiritual identity become relevant? We should remember that Rag Marg is fully independent and distinct from Vidhi Marg. The consideration of scriptural injunctions and favorable arguments and reasonings which support strict adherence to the Vaidhi Bhakti paradigm is ultimately inconsequential to the sprouting of lobha, as is the consideration of one's level of progress on the Vidhi Marg. It has been ascertained by the Acharyas that it is the grace and compassion of the Lord and His devotees alone that causes the awakening of an individual's craving for the path of Rag. Hence, even though Vidhi may play a part in the matter of subduing a neophyte's inordinate, materially contaminated rag meaning attraction toward mundane rasas, Rod means attraction, or sometimes it means attachment. But it actually means attraction. One is attracted to something. So there's mundane rag and there's transcendental rag. Just like there are mundane rasas and there's Vaikuntha rasas. And Braja rasa is the highest among the Vaikuntha rasas. So it has been ascertained by the acharyas. What is it? That it is the grace and compassion of the Lord and His devotees alone. There's no other cause for one becoming, greedy for attaining the realm of Braja and an eternal relationship with Krishna in the realm of Braja. There's no other cause of the awakening of an individual's craving for the path of rag, save the grace and compassion of the Lord and His devotees. Hence, even though vidhi may play a part in the matter of subduing a neophyte's inordinate, materially contaminated rag, it cannot be said that vidhi and the strictness of one's adherence to Vaidika principles in and of itself has any direct bearing on one's adhikar for pursuing the path of rag. Due to purva sanskars caused by graceful devotional association in previous lives, someone may easily gain suitable sadhu sangha in the present life and have the good fortune of and receptivity required for lobha's seemingly very early appearance. Another, for whatever reason, may not come under or become awake to the Braja Bhakti influence until much later on, if at all. It may be readily concluded, therefore, that at whatever time one becomes the object of Radha Krishna's, Guru Gauranga's, or a Rasik Vaishnava's special causes mercy, at that time only one becomes fortunate enough, a Rup Brahmanda Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev. Bhagyavan means fortunate. Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Lata Bhij, Braja Bhakti Lata Bhij. It is by that fortune is created, just like Srila Prabhupada said that he created our good fortune. So it is by the grace of the Rasik Vaishnava, like Srila Prabhupada, but also there's necessity for receptivity of the individual based on previously accumulated Sukriti, which gives that strength of Shraddha. Shraddha means the recognition of the need to surrender, Sharanagati, to accept favorable processes for advancing on the platform, on the path of Uttama Bhakti. Accepting the favorable things, rejecting the unfavorable things. There's six symptoms of surrender you've heard about, huh? Mentioned in Nectar of Devotion, I think. So actually, if you will apply this principle, these principles, and understand how they relate to what it is that we're dealing with in this Krishna consciousness movement, then you'll start to see the thing more clearly, what it is that we're actually endeavoring for. What is actually being preached? Somebody else may be preaching something else, not understanding what it is that is actually being preached by the acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada. But that's another thing. It may be readily concluded, therefore, that at whatever time one becomes the object of Radha Krishna's, Guru Gauranga's, or a Rasik Vaishnava's special causeless mercy, at that time only, one becomes fortunate enough to gain profound attraction to and subsequent greed for the cultivation of Braja Bhakti, irrespective of one's higher or lower degree of Vaidika development. Then only, by divine grace, does the genuine need to be esoterically instructed arise. The dictum most sanctimoniously bandied about, first deserve, then desire. Have you ever heard that before? First deserve, then desire. First deserve, then desire. You know, again and again and again we hear first deserve, then desire. But should be rightly understood. One deserves to desire simply when, by the grace of God, and I could have added, and or his devotees, one's desire is big enough. One deserves to desire simply when, by the grace of God, one's desire is big enough. Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. One's desire is big enough when there is no room in the heart for any other vulture-like desires. Ultimately, vulture-like was added extemporaneously. Some of you know why. Ultimately, the bottom line is this: dire necessity knows no law. It is important to mention that the Acharya's use of the terms Bahiranga, external, and Antaranga, internal, with reference to Ragmarg Bhajan methodologies, denotes two distinct processes of Raganuga Sadhana. The Bahiranga system, which under the auspices of Lord Gauranga was taught by Swarup Damodar Goswami to Vikreshwar Pandit, who in turn imparted the same to his disciple Gopal Guru Goswami, was communicated to further generations through the writings of their successor disciple Dhyan Chandra Goswami. The more esoteric internal method of Madhurya Bhajan culture, on the other hand, was bestowed by Swarup Damodar Goswami upon Raghunath Das Goswami. Has anyone heard of Raghunath Das Goswami? Raghunath Das Goswami wrote so many beautiful books, who gave deep expression to that substance, the esoteric process of Rag Bhajan, throughout his many literary contributions. So if you want to know what that's all about, then you have to acquaint yourself with the writings of Raghunath Das Goswami, and you'll gain entrance into that realm of bhakti. Though both systems are authorized and useful either separately or combinedly, upon careful scrutiny, the characteristic slant of the two distinctive approaches becomes evident. Put simply, the external gradual course primarily integrates elements of Archan Vidhi with a focus on the precise conceptual configuration of appropriate Ragmaya form. Form is underlined for emphasis, in consonance with the Braja Leela paradigm. In contrast, the intuitive internal process stressing culture of the unalloyed devotional attitude highlights the supranatural resurgence of the Aprakrita Swarup's intrinsic or constitutive spirit, underlined, spirit as opposed to, or not as opposed, or in contrast, as contrasted against form. There's no opposition here, but the idea is one is emphasized in one process and the other is emphasized in the other process. So, in the intuitive internal process that is shown by Raghunath Das Goswami in his writings, What is stressed is the culture of the unalloyed devotional attitude, which highlights the supernatural resurgence of the Aprakrita Swarup's intrinsic or constitutive spirit via the sympathetic rightful assimilation of and response to pre-established Brajabhava expressions. Like you'll hear expressions of in Vilap Kusha Manjali, you'll hear expressions of Rati Manjari's moods of devotion. You know, and in similar writings of other of our acharyas coming in the Rupanuga Sampradaya, you will hear similar types of expressions. So when you hear these, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his songs, he gives expression to certain feelings, certain bhavs. So it's kind of as if we make their song our song. We respond to their song and appreciate saying that, well, that's nice, and I can identify with that. You know, that, you know, the shoot fits wear it, so to speak. You know, so I can identify with that. Not only Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Dainyabhav, his feelings of, you know, great remorse and humility on account of you know, being, you know, a crass materialist or something, as he expresses himself. Narottam Das Thakur does the same thing. You know, woe is me, I'm so fallen, you know, please rescue me, Krishna, now I'm yours, you know, all that I am, you know, and all that I have, I'm yours. You know, so that's, you know, an expression of Dainya Bodhika, it's called. So, but also, there's expressions of when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says things like, you know, gone is the masculine egoism. You know, now I am your eternal maidservant. And he's praying to Radharani, you know, and giving expression in his Gita Mala also. So these are high topics, but gradually we have to become acquainted with these things and understand that this is our line. This is our wealth. This is what the Gaudiya Sampradaya has to offer the world. If we neglect that, for the rest of our days and the rest of our years and the rest of our lives and lives, how many lives, you know, thinking ourselves to be so unqualified that we can't even take a peek to see what it is that they're trying to get us to, you know, become attracted to. And then, well, we're the losers. So Raghunath Das Goswami's idea, his presentation, is the idea of awakening. Shravanadi Shuddhachiti Koroye Udoya, awakening Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema within the heart by hearing about topics which we can begin to appreciate and identify with and say, hey, you know, that you know, seems to, you know, strike a chord in my heart. And then, you know, by hearing about these topics, then gradually we start to deepen our appreciation, and then greed, lobha, for the thing develops. And when lobha develops, then that becomes our adhikar for pursuing the path of Radha, according to the acharyas. So, anyhow, although an in-depth discussion about these topics would certainly be in order, at this juncture, it should suffice to draw the reader's attention to the fact that it is undeniably Prayojan Acharya Raghunath Das Goswami's esoteric antaranga method of Raghunuga cultivation, which eminently stands at the core of Rupanuga Vaishnavism. Some devotees though not understanding the intricacies of their own spiritual identities, may for all intents be esteemed as elevated uttam adhikaris, given that they have somehow 100% surrendered body, mind, and words to the service of the Lord and His holy name with undivided faith, realizing Hari, Nami, and Harinam to be identical. That is the opinion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as evidenced in Jagadananda Pandit's Prema Vivarta. Still, it would not be unreasonable to infer that these individuals, far from being fully self-realized, really need to make considerable progress to be all they can be, all they can potentially be as representative Gaudiya Vaishnav spiritual masters in disciplic succession. To be sure, the internal bhav and pure devotional outlook of a Kevala Madhurya Premika Bhakta, Brajvasi or Brajvasini, would no doubt have to be conscientiously and meticulously cultivated here and now in this current lifespan if one were to expect to achieve the highest perfection this time around. Otherwise, one could hardly expect to fully transcend all substandard notions, material or spiritual, about oneself before quitting the present physical body. It is not good enough to remain a fallible neophyte with an ambiguous sense of belonging to the spiritual realm. Everything will be tested at the time of death, the outcome determined by one's previously cultured bhava. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajatante kalevaram. These are very familiar verses, but now you can begin to understand how they apply, you know, to the esoteric culture of Antaranga Bhakti. Because when we're talking about what kind of bhava you have at the time of death, well, you know, did you cultivate the bhava of a Braja Gopi or a Braja Gopa? Or did you cultivate the bhava of a vulture? I'm not going to leave you alone about this. Vulture flies high, high, high in the sky. You know, but Prabhupada says, like, you know, but what is his business? He has very, very keen eyesight, and he's looking way, he's looking down to the worldly platform, you know, to search out some dead body. So in the same way, we come to the highest realm in both the material and spiritual worlds. This Braja Bhumi is considered to be the very topmost realm. And instead of actually seeing the beauty of that realm, we looked to the worldly platform to seek out some dead body. Which kind of bhav do you want to, you know, cultivate? You want to cultivate, you know, the transcendental, elevated, spiritual bhavas, so that when you leave the body with that bhava, then that determines where you go. Just like Bharat Maharaj, it can be said that he had the bhava of a mother deer looking after a little baby deer. You know, so what did he get? He got the body of a deer because he cultivated that bhava. You know, so the same way, if you cultivate the bhava, if you try to understand what is the bhava, it's not so easy to understand. But it's not so difficult either. At least you can, you know, take steps in the right direction by cultivating an unalloyed devotional attitude, unconditional devotional attitude. That's the whole purpose of Srila Prabhupada preaching about cultivating, you know, the unconditional devotional attitude. Not that we become yes men or yes ladies, but that's not what is meant by unconditional. Unconditional means that you're prepared to surrender to the reality, you know, or the absolute truth, service of the absolute truth in all conditions of life, come hell or high water. That is unconditional. Without, you know, reservations, without, attachments to your own personal self-satisfaction in the matter, or whatever it may be. So, therefore, Prabhupada always stressed unconditional, to go beyond your psychophysical nature, so to speak. Just like he would push us to go out on book distribution and redouble book distribution. This is a type of training field to help us develop that unconditional devotional spirit. That is the beauty of engaging in the missionary activities as a neophyte, is it gradually helps us to develop that unconditional devotional spirit so we can begin to enter into the spirit of where the gopis are actually at. At a later stage. That is the beauty of the whole thing. We never say that one should discard Vaidhi Bhakti or discard missionary activities. That is a great foolishness. And that is not advocated in my book at all. But my book is focusing on and giving emphasis to the need to understand the importance of having the willingness, the preparedness, the readiness to take the necessary next steps that are required for actually making the progress that we need to make to culture the Bob that we need to have at the time of death, so that we don't remain, in the vast majority category who will not make it back home, back to Godhead in this lifetime, which we get into a little bit. It is not such a cheap or haphazard affair that, oh well, anyway, somehow or other, what me worry? No. Not that we apathetically await a windfall of mercy while mulelessly ignoring the purposeful scientific pursuit of the Gaudiya Sampradaya's highest ideal. It is a fact that the vast majority of those claiming to have been initiated by a bona fide guru in proper disciplined succession in terms of either Bhagavat Vidhi or Pancharatrika Vidhi will not upon the end of the present lifetime be fortunate enough to attain the Lord's manifest Brajalilas. If we want to be included among the small percentage that actually succeeds, the rest will have to take who knows how many more births till they finally give up their vulture mentality. If we want to be included among the small percentage that actually succeeds, we will have to seriously focus and intensify our bhajan. Kripa Siddhi is very rare, an extremely atypical improbability. Though we in all our inadequacies hope and pray for such divine dispensation, we cannot sophistically force the exception to become our rule. That is not in our hands. The standard success formula, which largely stresses our willful application of appropriate devotional practices, should not be artfully ignored. We must scrupulously deepen and deepen our inner quest. Jivasya tattva jigyasu. There should be no other purpose behind any of our life's activities. Narto yascheha karmabhi. That is deservingness. First deserve, then desire. Narto yascheha karmabhi. That means there should be no other purpose, no other goal to any of our activities than gaining the answer to this inquiry about the truth of the jiva's eternal constitutional relationship with Krishna. That's serious. yogi, yogini. That's being real about your devotional life. There should be no other purpose behind any of our life's activities. Do not heed the diehard religio-institutional dogmatist. It's not enough that children pretend to be adults ad nauseum. A tad of spiritual common sense may have to be mustered to grasp this point. This is one of my favorite parts in the book. I'm very happy that Krishna forced me to write this. Revelation of the truth, jivase tattva jigyasu, of our eternal relationship with Krishna, is gained through priti bhajan. You know that shloka? Bhajatam priti purvakam vidami buddhi yogam dham yenamam upiyam. Tesham satata yogtanam means constantly engaged in priti bhajan. Not any kind of bhajan. You know, not any kind of bhajan. Revelation is gained through priti bhajan. To one lovingly engaged in devotional service, rad bhakti. Brajendanandan Krishna from within supplies the intelligence required for achieving his eternal association. Not to one fearfully engaged merely on the basis of Shastra Vidhi, rudimentary scriptural rules. Did you catch that idea? Revelation is gained through priti bhajan. I could have said it is to one lovingly engaged in devotional service, rad bhakti, that Brajendanandan Krishna from within supplies the intelligence required for achieving his eternal association, not to one fearfully engaged merely on the basis of Shastra Vidhi, rudimentary scriptural rules. Priti bhajan undoubtedly connotes the ragatmika bhakti of either the mukhya brajajanas or the sadhan siddhas and kripa siddhas who have been elevated from conditional existence to the status of eternal brajvasi associates of the Lord. The foremost feature of this priti bhajan principle is found in the young brajagopi's mode of spontaneous loving service. Ramya, Kachid, Upasana, Brajavadu, Vargena, Yakalpata. There is no higher expression of priti to be seen anywhere else. Dumping family ties, household duties, reputation, feminine bashfulness, as well as all moral considerations, they run in the dead of night with resolute enthusiasm to satisfy the senses of Krishna. Lord Krishna reciprocally unfolds his innermost heartfelt feelings in proportion to the intensity and depth of his devotees' loving sentiments. The young damsels of Braja, distinct from devotees in Vatsalya, Sakya, and Dasya rasas, are ever infatuated and enthralled to intimately engage with him day and night, satata yuktanam, in keeping with the Astakalya Nitya Lila format. It is of little wonder that Krishna would feel naturally inclined to reveal to them his highest penchant for the pleasures of paramour love, parakiya rasa, awarded them, awarding them the intelligence, the dhammi buddhi yogam tam, by which they may overcome all obstacles, so-called husbands, in-laws, superiors, in their endeavors to unite with him as their upapati, yena mam upayantite. Yet it may be observed in this connection that the parakya disposition of one belonging to another catalytically diffuses its influence from different angles all over the land of Braja to augment both in the Lord and in his devotees an apprehension of mutual unattainability in various ways. This effectively intensifies the nuances of love, priti, in all the primary rasas. It is certainly a fact that when applied to the delusive sense of Krishna's belonging to another, in other words, it's not only the gopis belonging to another husband, but Krishna also belongs to another. How is that? As the son of Vasudev and Devaki, as the scion of the Yadu dynasty, or as a denizen of any realm other than the land of Braja, in other words, Mathura and Dwarka, the Parakya notion hurls his parents, that idea that Krishna belongs to another realm, or that Krishna belongs to Vasudev and Devaki. How can Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, you know, what do you think that does to them? If that parakya, that he belongs to another, he never, that notion, that concept, that idea coming across, that what? We always thought that he was our Krishna. And here, you know, Akura is saying that, you know, Krishna belongs to another. You know, so this generates in Nanda and Yashoda this experience of parakya tattva in relationship to Krishna, that Krishna is belonging to another. And what is it doing? The parakya notion hurls his parents, friends, and servants into a deluge of acute loving desperation. Here, resultantly, the devotee's mind and heart are seen to run mad after Krishna in a way undreamed of in any other quarter of the spiritual world. The dread of separation from Krishna dramatically increases his value in the eyes of his devotee. That is the primary result. Of course, it is reciprocal, but the primary, you know, effect is seen foremost in the result that it has in the hearts of his devotees. His devotees feel a dramatic increase of Krishna's value. You don't know what you got till it's gone, so to speak. You understand? So when it's slipping through your fingers, then all of a sudden you realize, you know, how valuable was that moment that I played hard to get and didn't see Krishna. You know, then I wish I could call back all those moments, you know, and relive them, and then I wouldn't refuse to see Krishna again, because they were, you know, such valuable moments that I have no longer, because Krishna's gone for 100 years. You know, before he comes back finally to Braja. And, you know, the gopis were cursing Lord Brahma for creating bodies that had eyelids that blink, because they couldn't tolerate the feelings of separation for even the blinking of an eye. And here they are experiencing separation from Krishna, or Nanda Maharaj, Yasodamai, experiencing separation from Krishna for 100 years before he finally comes back, after killing Dantabhadra, that is described in the commentaries in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. With regard to the Madhurya Rasa, however, the Parikya Tattva finds its ascendancy not in the supposition that Krishna belongs to any other, as aforementioned, but rather in the fancy that the young newlywed gopi girls themselves belong to others, their so-called cowherd husbands, and that Krishna must assume the wife thief like Upapati Bhav in his efforts to woo their hearts. The super excellent specialty of this Parakya angle of influence is that it augments the succulence of rasa not so much by intensifying the devotee's desperation to serve the lotus feet of Krishna, but by amazingly amplifying Krishna's desperation to serve the feet of his devotee. Out of extreme anxiety to meet the nearly unobtainable Shyamasundar becomes the unobtainable, meaning Radharani particularly, Shyamasundar forgets himself, babbles incoherent nonsense, and wanders aimlessly around in circles like a madman. His disquietude over being separated from his gopi beloveds increases their worth in his eyes, making his mind and heart run after them with special deference to the supremely luscious lotus feet of Sri Radhika. It may be additionally noted in this connection that there are two brilliantly illuminating developmental features of gopi prema described in the Shastras, that is, Grita Sneha, love like ghee, which is not sweet in and of itself, and Madhu Sneha, loving affection like honey, which is always permeated with the sweetest deliciousness. It was fun writing this. Although married to another, namely Govardhan Mala, a situation which augments the Parakya Bhav in that sense, Sri Chandravali, the right-wing gopi embodiment of Grita Sneha, that means like ghee, which is not sweet in and of itself, it needs to be mixed with other elements to become sweet. So, Chandravali, the right-wing gopi embodiment of Grita Sneha, characteristically traverses the inner path of thinking, I belong to him. I belong to him. She's thinking, although she belongs to another, her thinking, the Parakya Tattva, goes internal. You know, takes on another dimension, a more internal dimension in this part of the discussion. As Krishna congruously, is it congruously? Or congruously? Congruously. Anyway, I forget how it's pronounced. Reciprocates his devotee's bhav, it is seen that he sometimes, in the course of his all-accommodating frolics, condescends to nourish Chandravali's affectionate feelings. But he's still his own man. In other words, he's still his own. Yet, Sri Radhika, the left-wing gopi embodiment of Madhu Sneha, exerts an entirely different Parakya influence over Lord Krishna on the basis of her thinking, he belongs to me. As Krishna responds to Radha's feelings, he finds that he is no longer his own man. He belongs to another, Parakya. He is hers. He's no longer his own. He is hers. No longer is he independent. Rather, he, the Supreme Beloved, becomes the henpecked lover of she who now dominantly disports the dignity of being supremely loved by him. She becomes his beloved. He madly runs to give himself to her, and she from time to time condescends to allow him to become her devoted servant, making him dance like a puppy dog in her hands. She becomes the prepossessing possessor of him who is ever increasingly possessed by her totally enticing, honey-like, transcendentally preponderant, ever new supramundane feelings of absolute possessiveness. Thus, in her absence, Sri Krishna, transcendentally engulfed in his own amorous delusions, finds himself dancing behind a most skillful dancing master, Sri Radhika's roving image, appearing before his lovesick gaze in every Vrindavan tree and creeper in every direction. Parakya Tattva similarly goes on to manifest another charming permutation. Radha's maidservants, like Radha, also cherish not the humor of belonging to Krishna. They are Radhika Snehadika, Sakhis, who, though married to other cowherd boys, treasure the status of belonging to Radha. They don't belong to Krishna. They belong to Radha. They belong to another Radha. They don't belong to him. So he has to struggle. They become very, very hard to get. They are Radhika Snehadika Sakhis, who though married to other cowherd boys, treasure the status of belonging to Radhika. Upon seeing a Manjari's sincere and unwavering devotion to Sri Radha's lotus feet, a devotion filled with boundless love greater even than the love he himself feels for his own devotees, charming Krishna will embrace her, take the betel nuts from his own mouth and place them in hers, and place his own forest garland upon her, upon the Manjari. Why? She is not his. She belongs to another, Parakya. She is hers. Having taken shelter, hers is capital, Radha, Radha's. Having taken shelter of the indomitable fortress of Radha's lotus feet, she has conquered him outright. As seen in Sri Sanat Kumar Sanghita, Lord Krishna instructs Sadashiva, quote, "A person who once surrenders to her, Radha, saying, 'I am yours,' attains me also without doing any extraneous sadhana. Of this there is no doubt. Therefore, O Shiva, one who desires to conquer me should surrender wholeheartedly to her. In this way, one becomes extremely dear to me." End of quote. In Ujjvala Nilamani, Mani Manjari says to the young, inexperienced Chatura, quote, "Chatura, let me teach you what I have learned from my own experience. If you make friends with Radharani, then within that friendship is automatically included ecstatic love for Hari." End of quote. Again, Krishna says in the Adi Purana, quote, "One who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee, but one who claims to be the devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee." End of quote. Elsewhere in the Padma Purana, Lord Krishna intimates to Narada, quote, "Therefore, if you want to impress me, then become wholly devoted to Radha." End of quote. Krishna has personally given himself to Radha, and as might be expected, he very much appreciates and identifies with those elevated individuals who fortunately follow suit, who also give themselves to Radha. Indeed, he becomes madly enamored by the Manjari's Sakhi Snehadika based unstinted bodily beauty, a sublimely scented beauty far surpassing that of the Sakhis possessed of other bhavas. Hence, birds of a feather are seen to flock together. Since the Manjaris are so intimately intertwined with Radhika, and Krishna's heart is ever given to Radhika, the proximity of Krishna and Radha's kinkaris is not so astonishing. Pure devotees have no desire for mukti. They desire only Shuddha Bhakti. Yet mukti is automatically achieved by them without their directly endeavoring for it. In the same way, though having not even the slightest desire to directly associate with the rascally Krishna, having no desire other than to serve Radha's lotus feet, Radha's maidservants naturally gain optimum access to the loftiest communion with Radharani's Swayamrup Krishna, unimaginable to Radha's other categories of Sakhis and Krishna's various other Yukteswari mistresses. If tender-hearted Srimati Radharani affectionately shows her kinkari to her Krishna, who walks the path of debauchery, ordering the Manjari, to play the role of a transcendental love thief, please hear how that maidservant will faithfully serve her with smiling, sidelong glances, and with the hairs of her body standing up with joy. She will tightly embrace Krishna. In this way, she will taste the nectar of Radhika's charan seva. This is how she serves the lotus feet of Radha. On Radha's order. Krishna tells the Manjari, quote, "The queen of my life is very merciful to you," end quote. And even though he again and again kisses her, embraces her, and maddens her with the nectar of amorous pleasures, and even though he creates in her a wonderful wealth of sweetest love, the Manjari's thoughts nevertheless remain ever absorbed in the nectar pastimes of Sri Radhika's lotus feet. When the Manjari's necks are embraced by the magnificent arms of Radha's lover in the sweet and wonderful Rasa Dance Festival, splendid with tinkling bracelets, anklets, and other ornaments, they will always fix their gaze on the footprints of their queen, having no motive other than to please her. Seeing the Manjari's unrivaled love for Radhika, a love that is outclassed even his own, and seeing the Manjari's purest motive to intently serve to fulfill her purposes, enthusiastic Krishna inundates her with his own amplified love bliss, unknown even to his own devotees. Even so, the Manjari's resolve to sympathetically savor Radhika's sweetest ecstasies, which exceed Krishna's ananda 10 million fold, keeps her always fixed and victorious. This same Parakya permutation, however, has another important function. There are many times, perhaps more often than not, when a Manjari must thoroughly resist Krishna's advances in order to safeguard her integrity as Radha's confidential kinkari. The Parakya sense of belonging to Radha rather than to Krishna fortunately affords her the necessary footing and firmness to successfully accomplish the task. This bears special significance, particularly for the sadhan siddha manjaris who are vibhinamsa jivatmas possessed of limited potency. They are anu, very insignificant, whereas Krishna is vibhu, unlimitedly great and omnipotent. On her own, the sadhan siddha manjari could hardly hope to withstand the onslaught of Krishna's unlimited attractiveness, sweetness, beauty, and handsomeness. How could she resist him? Can a particle of iron escape the force field of a great magnet? Highly unlikely. Yet, if there is the influence of a greater magnetism, if the sadhan siddha manjari is constantly bound by the force of greater attraction, greater sweetness, and greater beauty, she can easily deflect his absolute unlimited wantonness. That is Sri Radhika, Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. Mahatmanastumam Partha, Daivim Prakriti Ashrita. Yes, that is Mahatma, who takes care of, and Prabhupada himself says, who is that Daivim Prakriti? Is Radha. Radhika, Daivim Prakriti. Taking shelter. So this is the endeavor here is to illuminate another angle on the idea. Without her shelter, who could stand a chance? Radhika, the supreme Sarup Shakti counterpart of Sri Krishna, is also Vibhu. She's also unlimited, like Krishna. As such, Radhika, on the basis of her transcendental preponderance, can effectively ward off the rapacious cupidity of her lover when she deems it necessary to play hard to get. So too, under the auspices of Radha, can her privileged Vibhinamsa Kinkari, through her bond of affection to Radhika, reinforced by her Sakhi Guru's potent directives, which totally accord with Radha's wishes. On the strength of Radha's prevailing influence and her rigid disinclination, the Manjari's rigid disinclination to breach Radha's trust, the Manjari boasts the requisite authority and prerogative to say no to Krishna. No, no, no. Resisting, she may address Krishna in the following words. Quote, hey you Lumpata, control your senses. Forget it, I'm not yours for the taking. I belong to Swamini. I'm just her insignificant messenger. Merciless boy, be kind to me. Let go of the edge of my sari. Look, the sun is setting. I have to go to evening artik now. It is not your fault that you cannot understand my dear friend's message and you slight her valuable gift. You are just too unintelligent to understand. Krishna, why do you raise the fearsome Cupid's bows of your eyebrows in that way? O Krishna, O moon of Braja, if you neglect my friend and instead try to make advances upon me, I shall give up my life on the spot. End of quote. In this way, the jiva, though very insignificant, also facilely acquires the power to purposefully play hard to get. In other words, this an important beauty in this playing hard to get. Krishna's playing hard to get, you know, lifetime after lifetime. He plays the flute and then when we go and then runs and then he disappears behind a tree, you know, and then peeks out behind another tree, plays the flute. In this way, you know, he's playing hard to get, increasing our desperation, increasing our anxiety. But at a certain point, you know, the tables will turn. You know, when Krishna's calling us with the flute, and then we say, you know, not so fast, Buster.
There's a good reason for that. At this juncture, the Parakeya influence displays another noteworthy facet. This is the discussion concerning that point. Unattainability on the basis of Radha's dominion appreciably places the Sadhan Siddha Manjari in a much fairer light. Due to the inaccessibility of Radha's maidservant, which generates an increased fascination within Krishna's heart, the value of the infinitesimal becomes greatly magnified. After all, we're just little sparks. You know, how do we expect to hold Krishna's attention? You know, after all, a spark could hardly be very noteworthy. So we need to magnify our value in Krishna's eyes as much as possible. That's something easily obtained can be easily taken for granted and abandoned. Something rarely attained, even after considerable struggle, becomes highly treasured. Krishna can easily overlook, disregard, or cast aside the minute jiva. What is the appeal of an insignificant spark compared with that of an unlimited fire? Radha and Krishna are said to be like a single ghee lamp with two immaculate, brightly blazing, infinite love flames. They are ontologically one soul, yet inconceivably, they morphologically manifest as two, differentiated, synergistically, infatuated, limitlessly lovable supreme personalities. In the contest of their infinitely sublime love infatuations, neither admits defeat. Their absolute love play is perfect and complete, yet we see that they, in the course of their leelas, from time to time, make themselves scarce so as to augment each other's worth before one another. Sometimes Krishna disappears to increase the gopi's love for himself, or at other times, when, for instance, she finds that Krishna has started the rasa leela before her arrival to the rasa mandal, Radhika, unseen by anyone, indignantly goes into hiding across the Yamuna to mope in Mansarovara Lake of Tears. No one likes to be taken cheaply. Everyone likes to be appreciated. Why? Because the same psychology is originally there in the Absolute. If the infinite counterpart aspects of the Absolute see the need to actively expand each other's estimation of one another's worth, then how much more of such necessity exists for the relatively inconsequential Vivanamsa Jivas in their approach to the Lord's reciprocal relationship? The plight of the Jiva is such that her finitude hardly adds up to very much in the face of the unlimited fancy of the Absolute. Oversimplifying the matter, some would suggest that the unlimitedness of Krishna's heart can certainly accommodate and magnify even the smallest of the smallest spark of prema. Although that is not incorrect, still it may be objectively observed that when the jiva spark becomes especially splendorous by dancing in proximity to Sri Radhika's unlimitedly dazzling Vamamadya love flame, Krishna's appreciation of the jiva becomes extraordinarily enriched and distinctly sustainable. That is the sum and substance of Hare Krishna Mahamantra Sankirtan. Dancing next to Radha and Krishna's holy names. the jiva spark dancing next to the fire of Radha's love for Krishna in the Maha Mantra. Do not bother yourself to become too much infatuated with Krishna. Rather, act in such a way that Lord Krishna may become ever more infatuated with you. Do not bother yourself to become too much infatuated with Krishna. Rather, act in such a way that Lord Krishna may become ever more infatuated with you. In other words, you'll come to a point when, you know, in order to magnify your worth in the eyes of Krishna, you'll have to play hard to get. And Radharani's maidservants have a special, facility for doing that among all the devotees who attain the Braja Leelas in India. In the realm of Braja, Parakya Tattva glistens with yet another powerful radiance. Manjari Tattva, though commonly understood, this is really good, I like this part. Though Manjari Tattva, commonly understood to be constituted of a singular mindset, is in fact quite bejeweled with diversity. Just as there are left-wing Vama and right-wing Dakshina, Yukteswari Gopis and Sakis, with many varieties of devotional dispositions, so also there are many varieties of left and right-wing Manjaris. Rati Manjari is Dakshina Ridvi, by nature, right-wing and very soft and sweet, as evidenced in Sri Raghunath Das Goswami's Vilap Kusha Manjali. Rati Manjari, from her right-wing vantage point, stands as perhaps the greatest exemplar of the mood of belonging to her Yukteswari, Sri Radhika. I am yours, I am yours, I cannot live without you. O Queen, please understand this and bring me to your lotus feet. That was a quote from Vilap Krishna Manjali. Among the Asta Manjaris, Sri Lavanga Manjari is also Dakshina Mridvi. That means right wing and soft and sweet, very sweet. That means that she speaks when she... There's right wing and left wing. I don't think I get into it here, but there's the left wing mood supports the action of Radharani's Vyogini Shakti, and the right wing mood supports the action of Radharani's Samyogini Shakti. So the Vyogini Shakti is that Shakti which generates the separation between Radha and Krishna, and it is seen in her exhibiting man, you know, jealous, pouting and whatnot. So the left wing Manjaris and Sakis also, just like Lalita is Vama Prakara, she's very harsh and contrary, she supports Radharani's man, and she gives her lessons, teaches her, you know, how not to give up her dignity, you know, and again and again, you can say, spurs on, you know, her jealous pouting for the purpose of intensifying the experience that not only Radharani has in her desperation to at long last please Krishna in their ultimate meeting, reunion, you know, but also it is done with the knowledge that, you know, Krishna's, you know, got to work hard for his money, you know, he's got to struggle. A victory which was gained after a great battle is, all the more relishable. Something which was gained very easily is not, we were making this point in relationship to the Vivanamsa Jivas, is also there in terms of the principle of the action of the left wing and right wing Manjaris. The left wing Manjaris, they support Radha's Man. But when Radha's Man has done its dirt, so to speak, then the right wing Manjari, she knows, she steps in. Vishaka will tell the right wing Manjari, please go fall at the feet of Lalita and tell her to stop. So then Radhi Manjari is described in Vilapakusha Manjali, how she will go and fall at the feet of Lalita Devi, begging her to please allow Radharani to go and meet with Krishna. Enough's enough. Like that. So then that's where Radhi Manjari comes in. But Ridvi means very soft and sweet. She doesn't force the issue, but she lightly suggests to Radharani, very sweet talk, suggests to Radharani. Whereas there are those who are right-wing and harsh. They'll say, Radharani, why are you angry at Krishna for no reason at all? Don't you know that, your heart's desire, now go and meet with Krishna. They'll force her by strong words, making her ultimately fulfill her innermost desires to, be all she can be for Krishna. So here we have, I'm discussing here these different types of manjaris. Rati manjari is Dakshin Ridvi, soft and sweet. So similarly, and she as a right wing manjari, just like Chandravali has her in her right wing mood, she's having this mood of belonging to Krishna as a Yukteswari, as a mistress. So in a similar way, Rati Manjari's right wing mood, generates this mood of belonging to Radhika. I am yours, I cannot live without you. She gives expression to that in Vilapakusha Manjali. So Sri Lavanga Manjari is also Dakshina Ridvi, and Sri Rasa Manjari has qualities similar to hers. However, Sri Rupa Manjari is Vama Madhya, left wing, and midway between soft and harsh. She can be harsh when she needs to be, and she can be soft about it, but, her general tendency. Of course, even Lalita Devi is sometimes said that they manifest moods which are opposed to their own, basic nature. So it may happen under certain circumstances, but the general mood, Rupa Manjari, is Vama Madhya. She's left wing and midway between soft and harsh. Sri Guna Manjari is Dakshin Prakara. She's right wing, but like we expressed, she's harsh, speaks strongly, pushes Radharani, grabs her by the hand and drags her there. Whatever it takes. Sri Manjalali Manjari is Vama Madhya, like Rupa. Sri Vilas Manjari is Vama Mridvi, left wing and sweet. She may advocate, but mildly, sweetly advocate that Radharani don't pay attention to the nonsense. And Sri Kasturi Manjari is similarly Vama Mridvi in nature. The famous Sri Ananga Manjari, like Sri Rupa, is also Vama Madhya in temperament. As among countless snowflakes, no two are exactly alike, so too there are untold varieties of Manjari Bhav. I remember that sentence. Remember we were working on that one? It is therefore not at all astonishing that different manjaris are possessed of different cherished ambitions as well as different feelings toward their Yukteswari. Just as Radha's left-wing Madhusneha sense of possessiveness differs from Chandravali's right-wing Gritasneha sense of being possessed regarding their feelings toward Sri Krishna, so the Sakhi Sneha moods of the various Manjaris also differ. Like Rati Manjari, many feel within themselves a deep sense of belonging to Radha. Others, however, boldly embrace the prominent sense of Radha's belonging to them. And, as one might surmise, Radha mercifully reciprocates their feelings. Krishna belongs to Radha, but to whom does Radha belong? She does not belong to Krishna, nor is she self-possessed. She undeniably belongs to another, Parakya. She belongs to her Manjari maidservant. Krishna, in response to Radhika's bhav, again and again runs to give himself to her. But do you think he always finds it so easy? Certainly not. He's at the mercy of the Manjaris, who may not all be so kindly disposed toward his unabashed, wicked licentiousness. He often finds himself futilely begging at the feet of Radha's relentless left-wing Manjari maidservants, who derisively keep him at bay, playfully enhancing the effectiveness of the Vipralamba Rasa, which greatly nourishes the divine couple's mutually intensified emotional ecstasies at the ripest time of their imminent union. There's one more paragraph, and then I think we're going to have to close it for tonight. Devotees who aspire after the divine couple's eternal, transcendentally utopian realm of Swakiya Mai Sambhog Leelas, Ranga Mahal, generally think the Parakya punctuated Vipralamba Bhav to be antagonistic to the favorable fulfillment of Radha Krishna's desire for continuous relishment of Sambhog Rasa, Nitya Nikunja Vihar. This is the mood of the Nimbarka Sampradaya. They argue that in the spiritual world, the ananda savored by the divine couple in the company of their intimate associates ever increasingly expands for eternity anyway. So why wish upon them the distress of separation if the intention is to make them happy? It's a good argument. They are already ever increasingly happy to be in each other's company, so why disturb them on the plea of increasing their happiness? Just let them be happy, and ever increasingly so. This idea, which does not accommodate the interplay of the diverse rasas of Brajadham, is, however, analogous to an immature neophyte disciple's inability to understand the positive purpose of the Guru's castigation. Sri Guru mercifully excruciates a disciple simply to strengthen, upgrade, and intensify the disciple's determination for spiritual progress. Yet the less intelligent neophyte prefers to be flattered than to bear the weight of the Guru's reprimand, which seems intolerable. It is certainly a fact that the ananda of the Lord and his eternal associates eternally expand without limit. Still, on closer examination, it can be clearly observed that corresponding to the diverse lila configurations pre-limited to various sectors of Golok, Krishna and his entourage know either eternally ever-increasing ananda, eternally ever-increasing more intensified ananda, or eternally ever-increasing most intensified ananda. The Parakiya element of Brajalila certainly intensifies in various ways the Preeti Bhajan of the Lord's Ragatmika associates. This enhances the Lord's Anandamaya reciprocal dealings with them in a myriad of ways, making them the objects of his special consideration and affection. As Krishna becomes mad after the gopis, who are accomplished in their varieties of parakiya absorption, which overstep the regulative principles of the shastras, so also, by extension of his compassionate nature, Lord Krishna becomes very much inclined toward those sadhakas who, recognizing and aspiring after the super excellence of the Brajagopis' Parakya-loving sentiments, constantly dream deep of the ambrosial, preeti-saturated Astakalya-lila of Braja. He thus mercifully helps them by providing necessary intelligence, the ability to see things in proper perspective, and appropriate knowledge of the progressive path of Madhurya Maya Braja Bhakti Bhajan, Jnana Deepena Bhashvata, by which they themselves may ultimately achieve the perfectional platform of unalloyed preeti for his absolute pleasure. In this way, Brajendanandan Krishna kindly dissipates the darkness of ignorance, Ajnana Jam Tamaha Nasayami. In this way, Brajendanandan Krishna kindly dissipates the darkness of ignorance, Ajnana Jam Tamaha Nasayami, that prompts a sadhaka's attachment to any other objective.